Hey, Brad.
What's going on, Adam?
I got some exciting news.
Holy crap, they're making a Mighty Ducks 4?
No, but now I'm just really upset that they're not.
Oh, they should.
The exciting news is that beginning Wednesday, August 10th, exclusive About Last Night episodes will be airing on TuneIn. That's right, featuring just Brad and Adam, the original OGs. I know you guys love the ALN episodes that feature amazing celebrity guests, actors, musicians, incredible people with amazing stories. But starting Wednesday, August 10th, for 12 weeks, Brad and I will be releasing episodes with just Brad and I.
Cool. I like those guys.
It's going to be great. And where can people get these episodes, Brad?
They can get these exclusive episodes on the website, tunein.com/aboutlastnight. That's tunein.com/aboutlastnight, or you can download the TuneIn app. Type in TuneIn and get the TuneIn app to stream these exclusive episodes. Or we also have a player available on aboutlastnightpodcast.com. You can go to aboutlastnightpodcast.com, click on the TuneIn player, and stream the episodes live from there. We can't emphasize this enough. These are exclusive episodes to only TuneIn.com. You can't get these anywhere else.
Only available to users of the TuneIn platform. New episodes of Just Brad and Adam doing the About Last Night podcast. No guests, just Brad and Adam.
Oh, well, maybe Al Pacino. He'll come in and have a couple of appearances.
And preview his upcoming episode of The Pacino Attempt.
The Pacino Attempt, coming this fall.
Wait, what was it? You Kiss You.
And Then You Kiss You.
That's every Wednesday starting August 10th on TuneIn. Brad and Adam, exclusive About Last Night podcast episodes. You love it. You want it. And you can get it starting Wednesday, August 10th. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with me, Adam Ray.
And me, Brad Williams.
You went super high with your voice right there.
I don't know what you're talking
about. That was very dwarfy of you.
Okay. Agree with this, agree.
Hey, everybody. It's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Monday. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a great weekend. I did. What did I do? I relaxed. Mad TV ended. As far as shooting, the episodes still air for another 4 weeks, Tuesday night, CW, 9 p.m., 8 Central. But we had our last shoot day, our last live tape day, shot a bunch of sketches on Friday in front of a live audience. It was awesome, and there's a lot of really funny shit coming your way. So please make sure to continue to watch Mad TV, 9, 8 Central, CW, Tuesday nights. And then we had a rap party, and that was great. I went to the Dave Matthews Band concert on Saturday night. Have somehow gotten chummy with Rashawn Ross, the trumpet player in the band, and he hooked up tickets for me and my boy Steve Aguilar, and we went, and they were awesome, as always. Dave Matthews Band, you can hate on them all you want. They're some of the best musicians on the fucking planet, and they do shit that looks rehearsed, and it's just like they're so good and in sync that they just, it's amazing. Did I have a weed chocolate bean? Yeah, I did. Did I talk to Ryan Seacrest? Yeah, I did. Did I remind him about the time I was on a game show called Click in 1998, my freshman year of high school? His first job, a show that only aired in Seattle, Washington, that he hosted and I was on? And did he remember it and love that I was on it and we talked and he might be on the podcast? Yeah, that all happened. Today's episode is a good one. I spent many days with this fellow at Universal Studios Hollywood working. He was in the National Lampoon Lemmings improv troupe. He's an amazing actor. Voices Batman in the animated show Super Friends. You've seen him in tons of commercials. He was the first ever storyteller for the show Drunk History, before it was even on Comedy Central. And we get into all that, as well as New York and L.A. travel stories in which he just moved. A lot of just random conversation that is great when you have somebody like our guest who can just roll with the flow, provide a lot of hilarious commentary, and has a great voice. I'm talking about the one and only Mark Gagliardi making his ALN debut and crushing it. So fun, so funny. Enjoy this episode. We sure had a great time recording it. Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Gags. Also listen to his podcast, We Got This, on the Earwolf Network. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad for Brad, at ALN Podcast, at ALN Podcast on Instagram, Adam Ray 33 on Instagram, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. This weekend, Brad is in Tempe, Arizona, September 1st through the 4th. Tempe Improv, Arizona. Tempe, Arizona. Get your tickets at improv.com. This weekend, I'm in Seattle. I'm at Bumbershoot, baby. If you have been to Bumbershoot, the big comedy music festival in Seattle, get tickets. Come see me. The shows are posted on my website, adamraytv.com. I'm doing the goddamn Comedy Jam twice, which I'm pumped about. If you know anything about that show, it's my favorite show on planet Earth. It premiered on Comedy Central last night at 11:30. I'm sure you can watch it now on cc.com. That show is going to be great. My boy Josh Adam Myers. And going to do some stand-up as well. And then I got a bunch of other tour dates coming. AdamRayTV.com for all those tour dates. I'm going to Vegas, Pennsylvania, New York, Sacramento. It's all on the website. I started a new show today as well. Mad TV ended, and I started the Joey Mack Project. My boy Joey McIntyre from New Kids on the Block has his own 8-episode show premiering on the Pop Network sometime in the new year. And me, Joey McIntyre, Donnie Wahlberg, January Jones, Jamie Dembo. It's going to be amazing. It's a single-camera comedy, kind of Curb Your Enthusiasm style, about Joey's life post-pop star, and I play his manager. And it's going to be the shit. So we started today, and it's going to keep you busy for a minute. So, again, check all those tour dates, AdamRayTV.com, AstoriaMerchandise.com for all your ALN merch, hats, mugs, shirts, posters. Get them. Bring them to the shows. I'm about to hit the road hard, so I want to see all those ALN fans out and bring your merch. I'll sign them, take a picture, and we'll have a blast. So many great apps coming up. Blake Griffin, Brett Ratner, Bill Bellamy, maybe Seacrest. If we exchanged dialogue already, so say a prayer for that. That'd be incredible. Now that we got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's the merch info. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with our buddy, Mark Gagliardi.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it.
He's talking about he's submitting his stand-up special for a Grammy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Submitting. Which means nothing.
Yeah.
So it's in the running. So that it just means someone might actually have to listen to it, and that's a little better odds than just hoping that one of the important people is just watching Showtime one night,
right,
and then just goes,
Is that where it is now? It's on Showtime?
Yeah, it's on Showtime, but you have to release it as an audio thing, so now people can stream it. This is all very just invigorating stuff.
Right.
I mean, if you did win a Grammy, which, by the way, I mean, let's be honest, what are the odds?
I mean, first of all, they might not give me a Grammy nomination just because they're like, well, what happens with him in the podium?
That's a whole issue in itself. We are not prepared.
What do they just have that? Don't they have the thing like the Oscars has, the little slidey up and down?
Oh, yeah.
And it would just go, yunk.
Yeah.
A real quick raise.
Well, I mean, because there's probably like, because best singer in a now that's what I call music kids bop.
Right.
That's probably a contender. So they probably have to be prepared for that. So
they're only prepared for speeches over 5'7". So you're really going to – it's quite the curveball.
Simone Biles, you're not getting it this year.
Not this year.
If you do an audiobook, you're not winning.
I like the idea of an Olympic gymnast doing an audiobook.
Chapter one.
Dude, no shit, right?
Back to the U.S. of started in Peoria, Illinois in 2004.
Is that Carrie Strug?
Yes.
She really set the bar, no pun intended, as far as like gymnast, female, young, like prepubescent, like what do you sound like?
Yeah, this is she. My brother went on a semester at sea with her.
With Carrie Strug? With
Carrie Strug.
Wow, we did not know this.
That's, yeah.
Okay. Wow. What a fascinating opening story, Mark.
Are we going now?
Yeah. Okay, oh, yeah, we're going. Oh, I mean,
We were waiting for the Carrie Strug reference.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then that's our launching point.
It's common podcast knowledge. You always start with Strug.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't go wrong with Strug. Yeah, he went on a semester at sea with Carrie Strug, and he said it was, she was like, She was very cool, but she was like a squeaky bulldog because yeah. it was like post-gymnastics career.
Yeah.
And if your body has been just like slamming into the ground for that long,
yeah.
then it just you just become a solid block of muscle and marrow-free, completely dense bones.
And it stunts the growth.
Yeah.
And you don't like it sucks because I like in watching the Olympics, you see like the male swimmers and the male gymnasts are like, oh god, those are just alpha like
paragons.
They're just Adonises of all that is man.
Yeah.
But for a woman to do that, that sort of takes away from what people classically view as being attractive.
Right.
In terms of with the women, it's got, all right, now your shoulders are going to be huge. You're going to have no tits. You're going to be like super tall. Like yeah. it's. And for the gymnast, it just stunts you down to, well, my size. But
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's like, so. But,
I loved you in Rio, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was solid. I could have done better on the pommel horse, but I That's felt fair. My balance beam was good.
Yeah.
Low center of gravity.
Have you been watching the Olympics?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. Did you know this?
Oh, it's over.
It's over, yeah.
Oh.
Last night was the final, the big show. You know, they do the grand finale show.
I heard that both the opening and closing ceremonies were lackluster.
I didn't see the closing ceremony. I have it DVR'd.
Nice.
But I did watch the opening ceremony, and it was, yeah, it's just, at one point they just had Giselle walk across a stadium, and that was it. Like
Tom Brady's Giselle?
Yeah, because she's from Brazil, and they played the girl from Ipanema, and just she just started.
How does that go?
What the fuck?
And she just strutted her hot-ass legs and body itself?
Didn't say anything, just walked in her most runway-ish.
Just like, this is what came from Brazil. You're welcome. You get to see it all the time. Don't say too long. And Tom Brady.
What she did, though, was in doing that, all she was doing was walking from one end to the other. But she did do her entire job. That is all that has ever been asked of her.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe the occasional sandwich for Brady.
Yeah.
The occasional reverse cowgirl.
Yeah.
And then walk.
Yeah.
Walk and don't fall over.
Yeah,
walk,
exactly.
Walk and look gorgeous and make more money than your husband, who is arguably one of the top three greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Yeah.
John Elway obviously being number one. I'm a little biased.
Well,
but, good goes John Elway, Peyton Manning, Tom
also
Brady.
Also biased because of Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Look, I'm biased towards Peyton Manning, too, because I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, where he has a street named after
where
him.
Where he is God.
Where he is God.
He has restaurants, streets. What else does he have? A trifecta of being like a hero in your hometown?
In the hometown, yeah. He owns the Papa John's.
Okay.
He has the streets named after him.
Yeah.
And
Supercuts?
Yeah, I think if you have a Supercuts down there. Hey, our Supercuts were classy. You know, no, I think it's if you own a TCBY in Knoxville, because that's where all the that's where all the hot girls worked.
Really?
At TCBY?
Yeah. Yeah, I worked at TCBY.
So, like,
I loved TCBY.
Yeah, some people have Hooters. Knoxville
has TCBY. Yeah.
Wow.
We had a Hooters, too.
Girls love frozen yogurt.
They do.
You know?
Yeah. They like it better than ice cream, because ostensibly it's better for you,
for sure.
Which is incorrect
this
if you're putting
shit.
The same Reese's Pieces on it.
There used to be girls at USC that would like go to the Froyo line and I'd overhear conversations like, I'm just gonna have like a small, just give me a small vanilla. It's sugar free, right? And the person would be like, yeah, and fat free. Oh, great, sugar free and fat free. Do you guys want to share? Okay, so we'll just share. We'll just split it. And then put on gummy bears, Oreos, raspberries, Reese's Pieces.
Can you
do the full size Reese's? Yeah, that pizza. Can you put the whole pizza on or just the size? Okay, just one size. And then can you do one size from each pie though? And then at the end of it, you're like, well, that's just a bowl of fatty fat love.
But oh, they're so
good. Do not rent that porno.
Fatty fat love.
Fatty fat love. Or if that's
or
your
rent
thing,
it. Yeah.
Rent
yeah.
it.
Stop telling people how to live their life.
Yeah,
bro.
Everybody's got their thing that they like.
What was your favorite thing about the Olympics? Because I only watched a couple Phelps swims and the gymnastics, which to me is the women's gymnastics is always the most mind-boggling.
That was the best thing. Specifically for me, it was watching Simone Biles. Yeah. Do her signature move called the Biles, where she does this flip in the air and anyone else would land facing into the center of the mat based on how she is doing this flip.
Yeah.
Right. Come to find out she was injured at one point and couldn't do that, so she adjusted it. She does this crazy flip and like a magic trick when she lands, she's facing the opposite direction.
Right. And like no one else does it.
Right. Nobody does it.
Nobody else has a move named after them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got to say, the American women crushed it this Olympics.
Yeah. There you go.
We got
52
gold medals.
52
no,
gold.
Oh, sorry, I don't know.
No, something like 61. All I know is that if just the American women competed, they would have been tied for first place in gold medals. If only the American women competed.
Boom!
Yeah. Like, we got, our women got, I think it was 27 out of 46 gold medals that the United States got. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. American women crushed it this Olympics.
What would you, what would it take for you, no children yet, right?
No children.
Yeah.
No.
In the, down the line.
Mm-hmm.
If your daughter started to become interested in gymnastics,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, like, how do they gauge at, because I feel like it's, well, like two, three, like my nieces who are seven are mm-hmm. obsessed with swimming, and one of them has like surprisingly a decent amount of upper body strength.
Mm-hmm.
How am I gauging that? Do I look at other 7 year olds swim? No. But do, am I biased towards her? Yes.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Does she also,
does she beat me in arm wrestling every now and then?
Of course. Yes. But that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is her swimming skills. But like, at what age can you gauge for gymnastics? Like, oh, her tumbles are good, or because you saw those old videos of Simone Biles, like mm-hmm. just doing crazy backflips at like nine.
Well, and she was doing it at home too, a lot of that stuff, and you would always see like her in the living room. I guess the way that you gauge that is the first time that you go, no. Oh, wow. All right. Like the first time that you do that, you go, oh, dang. Yeah. We're going to put her in parent classes.
That's in the exclusive parent instruction handbook that the Olympics hands out. Your child is ready when you go, oh, wow.
By the way, that's a great name for a parenting book. No. Oh, hell yeah. No. Dot, dot, dot. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
The guide to turning your kid into a champion.
Yeah. That's right. Champion. Put her on a Wheaties box.
Well, because, I mean, some of the people, some of the girls are on the team and they're like 14 years old, mm-hmm. 13 years old. So it's like, when do you start? Like, when
and they'll say, like, I've been doing this my whole life. Like, you're like, that's not very long.
Like, I've been doing stand-up the same amount of time.
Yeah.
And I am not in
you're not the Simone Biles of stand-up.
I'm not the Simone Biles. I don't have a stand-up joke that's called The Brad. Okay? Yeah. Like, I don't, like, when he does a joke, he kicks his leg out this way, and then no one else could do that. Yeah. It's the although...
Your lap dance.
Maybe the lap dance. I was thinking that.
He used to close every show, and every now and then on a special night.
Yeah. I still do the lap dance every now and then, but yeah, I think that's called The Brad.
Yeah.
No one else does a cartwheel and lands on the girl's lap, which I do.
See, I never knew that there was a lap dance called The Brad. Now that I do, every time I go into a strip club, I'm going to be like, give me The Brad.
Dude, that's incredible.
And then the stripper's like,
Peyton Manning doesn't
like,
have
the
that.
What? I know the Mercedes.
She's like, all right, Brad, get over here.
The bouncer walks up. What was it like growing up in Knoxville, Tennessee?
Yeah.
Because I've been there. Because they have a comedy club there called Side Splitters, or they used to. Then mm-hmm. it closed down. But, it's a college town.
It is.
And that's all I saw.
In Knoxville. So Knoxville is the home of the Tennessee Volunteers.
Yep.
Go Vols, one of the great SEC football teams.
R.I.P. Pat Summitt.
Yeah, that's right. Man, Pat Summitt. She also has streets named after her.
Sure.
And the Supercuts.
She should have Dippin' Dot flavors named after her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She to me is almost, well, I guess Peyton Manning is probably the top, right? But Pat Summitt I would put
Pat
right
Summitt,
there.
If, for people from Knoxville, Pat Summitt holds the gold medal position of town hero.
Love it.
Peyton Manning is the Summitt, very close second.
If Summitt and Manning were both pulling into like a CVS parking lot,
Manning would let
space,
her park.
Yeah.
Yeah, he there would have go. To. You go, that is Pat Summitt. You let her park there. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that.
Knoxville is, so it's a college town. The games on Saturdays in the fall are the reason to live in that city.
Sure.
It's a beautiful town. It's just at the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. I grew up near Dollywood, which is in Pigeon Forge.
Yeah.
And Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, which is like what Branson is for Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pigeon Forge is for Branson. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So like,
so if there are tears.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's like the...
Lee Greenwood has a theater there.
So that's like the single A.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It is single A.
On the way to Vegas being the major leagues. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so there are a lot of great things about Tennessee.
Yeah.
Growing up in the South in general, though, I feel I have to apologize for a lot.
Why?
Well, just like... Because it's one of those... It's one of those places where you know that stuff is backwards and like, it's
sure.
like, ah, oh, come on, guys, you can, you can do better than this.
My favorite my this is Tennessee moment,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh wait, this is not what the kind of lifestyle I'm used to,
mm-hmm.
was the first time I played Knoxville. I was driving the radio, and on the side of the freeway was one of those billboards for one of those Pray the Gay Away camps.
Yeah, and it's that, stuff like that.
And that was like, on a billboard.
Yeah.
Like, not like something that you have to search and find on the internet.
Oh, no.
Or maybe your pastor hands you, but no, like...
They're actively seeking out Knoxville's gay community, which there is a great gay community in Knoxville, and they're... I grew up doing theater there, so it's
You know the gay community.
I know the gay community in Knoxville.
Yeah,
not anymore. I did back in the day.
Well, sure, it's college. You try things.
Right, exactly. you try stuff out.
What was it like? What's the art scene like in Knoxville?
Actually, pretty large.
Yeah,
it's because of the university being there.
Gotcha.
And there's a great old city downtown that's filled with art galleries and museums. The Knoxville Museum of Art is great. They have. I remember growing up, I was in a show choir as a kid. You know, sequin, bow tie, and everything.
Whoa!
And you're straight.
And I'm straight.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I turned out.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, look,
We can keep that going for a while.
I was one of, at one point, three guys and like 17 girls in this group.
Crushing this was, it. Come on.
It was like our one high school cheerleader that we had who was a guy that everyone kind of gave him grief until they found out he had slept with half of the cheerleading squad.
Yeah, dude.
And then every guy wanted to be a cheerleader.
Exactly. Nothing you can say at
that point. I think like every high school, their drama department goes through a similar thing where... The guys get made fun of, and then they go like, "Oh wait, but all these hot chicks are trying to pad their resumes. They're going to college,
exactly. Happy.
So they're like, they're all doing the shows, and then like, oh wait, there's only four straight guys there.
Yep,
yeah.
Options.
And
those,
and they did Fiddler, and the few straight guys, they slept with all of Tevye's daughters.
Yeah,
yeah.
Dude, when I played Danny Zuko in Grease my sophomore year, a bunch of the jocks gave me shit, and then I was like, hey, remember that hot senior girl you guys all want? She gave me a hand job in the car last week because I'm Danny Zuko. That's the only reason.
Because she loves John Travolta and loved the movie.
She loved the movie, and she loved that I could sing, kind of.
Yeah. That's all it takes.
Yeah. What songs would you do? Do you even remember? Or is that way too far back?
What songs I
show
would do
choir.
For?
Yeah,
show choir. Yeah. We did some Lee Greenwood. We had to sing Proud to be an American.
Well, I mean, you're in Knoxville.
We're
so
in Knoxville.
That's what you start
That's
every
a powerful
show with.
Song. And you have kids in show choir singing that in bow ties.
Oh, yeah. And the people would
tissues.
Go crazy.
Yeah.
You know what? Make fun of that song all you want. But when it's 4th of July and the fireworks are going off, and if you don't get a little choked up when I'm Proud to be an American comes on, then damn it, Trump, build that wall and kick you the fuck out.
Yeah.
Well, wow. See how close it happens.
There you go.
It just happens.
Gets y'all Tennessee'd up.
Yeah.
This week on Angry Dwarf, Brad talks.
I tell you what.
And our version was especially patriotic because there was a musical interlude in the middle where I stepped forward and would go, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men." And I did that whole part of the Declaration of Independence.
See that just reminds me of the scene from Team America World Police where they're doing the faux musical in the beginning.
Yeah.
And they just
Rent.
Yeah,
or AIDS.
Yeah, it's called AIDS. The musical's called Lease. It's called Lease.
That's right.
And then during the song Everyone Has AIDS, he just walks forward and goes, "Now everyone's dead. They've all died of AIDS. My mother, my father, too. Even my best pal." Like, he just has that moment. Like, that was your AIDS moment.
That was my AIDS moment. I stepped forward and had my sad AIDS moment at, like, 12.
I love that you said you were the guy that stepped forward to... Because you've always had, I feel like, at least since I've known you, which has just been the adult years, but, like, you have one of the greatest voices
in the
history of the world.
And coming from a voice guy,
I feel like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But as soon as, like... I've always thought I've had a pretty neat voice.
You have a great voice.
And then I met you and I go, well, no, I actually don't at all. And so did you have, obviously not that depth when you were in the show choir, but I mean, were you just always like that articulate and just a natural performer?
I started when I was really little. I started at, I did my first play when I was 5. And,
oh my God.
Yeah. And then I did my first television interview when I was 6. And I have it still for a play that I did called All the Way Home, which was James Agee is a Knoxville author who wrote a book that won the Pulitzer Prize. And then that book got turned into a play and a movie called All the Way Home.
Wow. Sadly, he has to wait for Peyton Manning to park.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he's like, all right.
He's number three.
I'm a Pulitzer. I'm not in for a Pulitzer, but whatever. Yeah. You got a big forehead. I get
Look,
it.
Look, David Keith has to park at a completely different lot.
Yo, doing press for a play, that's insane.
Yeah. Well, it was the local morning television show, but I listened to my voice in that, and I'm very articulate, but I sound like Dolly Parton,
because I have my thick Southern accent. My voice is real high. And I was like, "Yes, I play Rufus Follett in this play."
And
basically, it's your Zach Galifianakis, the twin brother from Baskets.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I did some radio commercials as a kid and growing up. I remember there was
one
at our local department store, and the only thing I remember from it was how southern and feminine I thought I sounded when I heard the commercial and heard myself go, "Levi's jeans are only $19.95." Like that was when I was like, I got to start working on this.
But you
hello there.
Yeah. It's all down here.
But somebody, now did you always want to? It was just easy for you to like perform and speak, like that stuff just didn't faze you as a kid?
I never had stage fright or anything like that.
Did your parents encourage it, or was this something that you sort of begged them let you do?
They were totally encouraged it. My dad always fancied himself a performer, and he had been, you know, he had.
Yeah.
My dad grew up in Philadelphia and sang street corner doo-wop. Like, and he's the exact same age as Sylvester Stallone, also from Philly, also Italian. So, first of all, when Rocky came out, my dad thought he won the Oscar.
Sure.
But, like, those guys...
Philly did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're like, well, the Eagles haven't won, so fuck it, but Rocky.
We all got this Oscar.
Yeah. So I think he fancied himself those doo-wop street corner guys in Rocky that are like, "Hey, yo, Rock!" And he's like, "Don't hang out with coconuts." My dad was one of the coconuts.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Did you ever see... You saw him perform, yeah?
My dad?
Doo-wop, yeah.
No, but we, as a family, he taught us when we were kids a couple of songs from the 50s.
What?
The old song, What's Your Name? What's your name? Is it Mary or Sue? I remember that because that was my part.
Wow.
And
but yeah, that sounds like, because I know the kind of doo-wop singers you're talking about, when you got essentially like the barbershop quartet going, that sounds amazing.
Oh,
it's awesome.
So he taught my brother and me parts from that. Yeah, and we sounded good, and we did Blue Moon as well.
You got to.
And we'll still do that in restaurants.
Just like start doing it randomly.
Yeah, my dad will go, we'll be at a restaurant, we'll be finishing up, and he'll have had, you know, a bottle of Chianti, and he'll go, "Hey, do it." And we'll go, "Bum, bum, 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 bum." And my dad would come in with a Blue Moon. Yeah.
I secretly want to be in a doo-wop group.
Right?
Yeah.
You would be great in a doo-wop group.
It just sounds so much fun.
I mean, come on, singing a cappella like on the street. It's like some of those guys, I've seen them like in Seattle at the Pike Place Market. They're unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, how are you? And groups like that make me very proud that there's like shows like America's Got Talent. But then you're just like, how do these guys get there? Like, you can't just... It takes, I think, one of us to be like, "You guys need to be on TV." And then, but then you see them and you go, "Man, they're great. I'm going to go get some cashews from that."
But, back to the weird magic shop underneath Pike Place Market.
Yeah.
Yes. Wait, how do you know about that?
My brother lives in Seattle.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Wait, this was maybe 5 years ago. Remember I ran you at the airport?
Yeah. And I was like, "Great. Can I have a ride?"
That was incredible.
Yeah.
And then my mom and I took you to your brother's house.
Uh-huh.
And then you sent us to your brother's restaurant.
Yeah.
And we got hooked up with a bunch of great, was it brisket?
He does a good beef brisket.
Shout out the place.
Yeah.
Seattle listeners.
Yeah, for those in Seattle, it's the Boar's Nest in Ballard. And when you go, get the mac and cheese balls and get the pulled pork and try all the different barbecue sauces. They are all regional. So he traveled around the South and studied barbecue sauce from every city that was known for barbecue.
See, that's what you need in places like the West Coast, Pacific Northwest.
Exactly.
Like, because you need a transplant. Because I've been to some quote-unquote barbecue places out here in Hollywood.
Right.
And, like, you know, because you grew up in Tennessee, like, it's just not the same.
Yeah, it's unless you have someone who's a transplant.
Right.
Exactly. It's like the Chicago, there's a Chicago pizza place in town that it finally, after years of living in L.A., I found a pizza place that I loved that was, they did a Chicago deep dish. And found out they're this couple. They're very kind. They're like, "Oh yeah, we just moved here from Chicago." We're like, "Of course you did. Yeah,
of course you did. That's why. That's how you know it's right."
Exactly.
It angers me sometimes when people come out like, "Oh no, this is authentic Kansas City barbecue." It's like, I will stab you. This is shit.
Yeah,
this is not good.
I will shank you with this plastic spork you gave me to eat your wilted collard greens.
Now when you debated fork or spoon on your podcast, we got this, which is available on iTunes, which you always debate a topic, and we'll get back to Grown Up in Tennessee, but
sure.
you debate stuff.
We do.
Every episode. And when you did fork or spoon, mm-hmm. did spork come into play?
We eliminated the spork immediately.
Well, wow. See,
yeah.
I would think that'd be a dark horse candidate. Like,
spork is pretty useless.
I would think so. Spork is like the Gary Johnson.
Yeah. It's, you know what, it's the one, if you don't like spoons or forks, and also your fork, you've fashioned the tines into giving a middle finger to every minority, and the spoon is hiding a bunch of emails, maybe then the spork is Gary Johnson.
Well done, sir. Well done.
How long have you had this podcast?
We've been going for about a year and a half. And it's been great. We were part of a show called, this is a podcast I do called We Got This with my comedy partner, Hal Lublin. We did a show called The Thrilling Adventure Hour for 10 years at Largo in Los Angeles. And we, 5 years at MBAR, 5 years at Largo. And we podcasted it and it became pretty popular. So we finished that run and Hal and I were like, let's, you know, we want to keep working together and have an excuse to talk every week and record ourselves talking. So he came up with this concept of we settle barguments, basically. Anything that people will get in flame wars about on the internet or throw glasses at each other in a bar about. Right. Our first episode was...
Which, if you're a dude, is just about anything.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. A couple beers and some topic that you kind of have a passion about.
Yeah. Well,
you'll fight
of,
for it.
No. That you kind of have a knowledge about, you absolutely have a passion about.
Yeah.
Something you've never thought of before, but in the moment you decide you are so angry about it.
It's like, I am drawing the line in the sand.
Yeah.
And no, how dare you say that the Dodger dog is a good hot dog.
Exactly.
Fuck off.
Well, our first episode was, should you put ketchup on a hot dog? That was our
good debate.
Wow,
solid debate.
And what was your stance?
Well, we don't pick sides, the two of us, and we don't each argue a side. Okay. We gather information, and it turns out you cannot put ketchup on a hot dog if you are older than 9 years old.
Why?
Yeah, because ketchup is designed, when put on meat, is designed to mask the flavor of poor quality meat. And hot dogs have gotten a lot better over the years.
They have, right?
German sausages do not use mustard. Do not use ketchup. They use mustard. And also, the president of the United States said, "No, don't put ketchup on a hot dog."
He did.
So we were like, "All right, well, the president said it."
Obama draws a line in the sand. I like that. Takes a stance on the hard issues.
Exactly.
You know.
I love that Obama said that, by the way. And I think the next president should take note and take similar stances on things like, you know, hopefully Hillary goes, you know what, I'm going Crocodile Mile over Slip and Slide, you know, and just settle the debate.
Crocodile Mile, the one that had the overhead slip sprayer.
And you slide and take a dip.
Yeah, you run, you slide, you hit the bump and take a dive. Yeah, now.
And you go over a bump, and then there's a little like shower curtain that you go through.
Yeah,
and
into a pool.
Crocodile Mile.
That's when Slip and Slide, they were sitting there being like, oh, we cornered the market on this. Just a fucking tarp, wet it down, and let the good times roll or break. And as you go into that fence, and the Crocodile Mile was like, what about a pool at the end of it?
Yeah.
As you go into that fence. That sounded like you've done that.
Dude, I tried to, when my nieces, when they were five, I got them a Barbie slip and slide, and they wanted me to go on it first. And I was like, hell yeah, I'll show you how it's done. Hadn't been on a slip and slide probably in 20 plus years.
And you are not a short guy. You're not like a slight dude.
Nope. And I also underestimated that type of just physical activity you don't do on the reg. So a jump sprawled out. I didn't know like how high I would go, how far. I completely jumped way too high, which in my head I was like, I didn't fucking know I could jump that high. Straight out like Superman. But jumped over the slip and slide and just hit my feet hit the end and stomach right on the grass. Dude, the thud was so loud. My nieces go, no! They just said no as I hit the ground. And I stood up being like, don't let them see you in panic because they're not going to want to do it. And so I'm just like, it's open. And
yeah, like, I was like, insane. Did you knock the wind out of yourself doing that?
Yeah,
because you essentially just belly flopped right on the grass.
That's the thing. You don't think if there's a toy there in the way, you don't think about the fact that if you took that away, you are just jumping in the air and landing on your stomach on the ground.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and you know what? Like, I love the fact that you came up with that because that's if you hang out with two or more dudes in a bar for more than 20 minutes, some debate like this will pop up.
Exactly.
The one here. All right, maybe we can sell this debate right now.
Okay, please.
Okay, because I've been having this debate with my friends for a while because I found out that if guys are at a bar and they see a dude like fighting a woman, you instinctively help the woman.
Yeah.
You just run in and you start beating up the other guy. You don't care.
Right.
And I found out, because this has happened to me, if some guy is fighting me at a bar, everyone instinctively helps me. They run over and they just beat up the tall guy. Like, what the fuck? Like they just do that. What happens if I'm fighting a woman?
Ooh.
What happens if a dwarf fights a woman? Who do you help?
Wow.
Oh, that's
look. We'll be right back with more. What would you do? But what would you really do?
Yeah. See, now I've come.
There's arguments for both sides, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I've come up with a generally accepted answer.
Okay.
And it's unfortunate that this answer is probably true.
Oh no.
But I think it is. If the woman is really hot, you help the woman.
Ouch.
Yikes.
But if it's
there's one way to look at it.
But if it's like me picking on a two, then you help out the two.
I thought it was if you – I thought it would be contingent upon whether or not she was sitting down.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So if you guys are at eye level and she's fighting you, then it's a fair fight.
Yeah.
Well, then it's an equalized fight.
Yeah. Right.
And so then you help the woman. I think generally, no offense, I think generally you help the woman.
You help the woman.
You always help,
women and children first. It's not, dwarves and children and then women.
We should have been named on the Titanic. Women, children, and dwarves first.
Were there any dwarves lost in the Titanic?
I don't know.
Why'd
you look at him? Don't you think I'd be the expert on that? Don't you think you'd come to me with all your dwarf questions?
I am a history buff. Yeah. I do not know of any dwarves that were lost on the Titanic.
Those facts slipped through the cracks.
Yeah. I know of dwarves that were lost in the Holocaust, not to bring it down, but I know about that.
Yeah. Did they get out?
They were. It's funny you mention that. This is my dream project.
Okay.
Every actor in this town has like their
Schindler's List 2. Like, what do you? Where they just show the dwarves that got out?
There was a Polish family of dwarves that were taken and they were also Jewish, and then they were taken captive. But then instead of going to the chambers, they were made to entertain the guards and prisoners of Auschwitz.
Really?
Yes. So they were a troop, and that was their thing. Now they were
the aristocrats.
Yes. Oh, I so want to do that joke now.
Or the aristocrats, because they were
exactly. Exactly. So there was my dream project would be to like do that story, because that would obviously win an Academy Award.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah.
It's got everything.
But who would star in it?
Why? Funny you bring that up. Well, it's got to be me versus Dinklage for the lead role, which, you know how we settle that.
How do you settle that?
Knife fight.
Oh, wow. Yep. You and Dinklage knife fight?
With a spork.
Oh, how dare you.
Spork fight.
Oh, spork fight will not last long. The fork part of a spork, it's basically just a slightly deeper grooved grapefruit spoon. That's really all that a spork is.
Yeah.
Because you can't, like, hold a spork on a steak and cut a steak.
No. Well, not with that attitude. But if you have... But if you have, I want to know, has there been any documented, like, spork injuries? Like, you've heard of people getting stabbed with forks and legitimately, like, you could probably do some real damage with a fork if you tried.
Sure.
Right? A couple forks.
Yeah.
Even, like, you could probably, you know, and I'm not looking to try, but, like, on a dick, you could probably, on a dick, and just snip it off, right?
On a dick.
With two forks, couldn't you just?
That's so horrifying.
It is horrifying.
I was specifically on a dick.
I like that. That's where you went. You didn't go eye gouging.
Yeah,
you didn't go.
I could poke you with this fork. I could take two forks, use them like a scissors.
Look. After Lorena Bobbitt did what she did. There is not a night that passes in my life where I don't go to bed thinking, if I'm spending it with a lady, then like, I better know this person well enough to where I know that that's not a possibility.
You
look, I have a fear of sometimes waking up with
your dick. Yeah. With your dick being cut off.
So, like, you just have, like, your fear you're going to wake up and it's going to be that scene from The Godfather, but instead of a horse's head, it's just your dick.
Were you not traumatized by that story? Like, he had to go out the yard and get it. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Yeah. I was more traumatized for the lawn that she threw the severed penis onto and then left. Because that guy just walks out the next day and, like, gets his morning paper and goes, all right, New York Times. What the fuck?
New York Times, dick in the yard.
Do you guys remember a couple of months ago the guy that got the dick transplant?
No.
There was a guy. This is the third successful penis transplant happened in the United States. There was one previously in Africa, one previously in Asia.
It didn't go well.
It went well.
But the other two didn't go well?
The other two worked.
This was the third successful one. This was the third successful one. There's been two unsuccessful previous ones. The other two were successful, he said.
No, the other two were successful. This is the third successful. But yeah, there must have been other attempts.
Penis transplants. So,
yeah.
Okay, so not so guys, men who were like, I need a new penis.
Yeah, and this guy, he had, which I'm laughing at it. It's very sad. He had dick cancer. And they had to cut off his penis. Mm-hmm. And when the morning that the doctors came out and they did the big press conference, and some idiot from the press corps asked him, they said, why did you want to get a penis transplant?
Yeah.
And he said, well, 5 years ago, they cut my penis off. And that's really the only answer I should have to give you.
Well, right, because, I don't have one.
Yeah, there's only one answer to that. Yeah, it's, I don't have one, and I would like one, please.
I mean, maybe we've all had the fantasy when we watch a black guy in porn going, if I could do a trade.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're not going to actually go through with it.
Right. It's not it's a penis transplant, not a penis transfer.
Yeah.
You can't just like, you want to trade dicks, dude?
Yeah. It's not like they remake Trading Places, but instead of Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, the people, they just transfer their dicks.
Now, you are a history buff. Where do you think that story is going to fall in line with, you know, just the chronological timeline of great things in human history?
I think it's 20 years from now, that story is not going to be in a lot of the books in the history section, but it's going to be in at least one, and it's going to be in like the quirky stories of the quirky medical stories, or it'll be in books in the humor section. It'll also be in, I assume, the Morbid Anatomy Museum, which I live down the street from in Brooklyn. This place, if you live in Park Slope, Brooklyn, go to the Morbid Anatomy Museum.
I did for 4 years.
Did you live in Park Slope?
When we were working at Universal Studios together, which we will get into after this, I lived in Park Slope with my girlfriend at the time for almost a year.
No kidding.
Yeah, that area is incredible.
Fifth Avenue and 9th Street.
Man, 7th and name other streets.
1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th.
There was a diner on the corner and a coffee shop on one corner.
Well, that's pretty much every corner.
I mean, that's Brooklyn.
And there was a staircase and rooms on top of rooms.
Yeah. And I saw
a hipster once.
There was an angry Italian guy yelling about the quality of coffee.
And there was a park near the slope.
There was a guy, I did see this once. I was walking up Fifth Avenue, and this goes to prove you cannot judge a book by its cover, not to use a cliche, but I'm walking up Fifth Avenue, and there's a very large Italian man, I assume Italian, maybe Persian, in a hair poking out from the white tank top that he was wearing, stained white tank top.
Classic.
Large, large man. And he leans out the door and yells out the door of a coffee shop that's in front of us to a guy who is way beyond me. And he leans out the door and he goes, "Hey, Joey! Here, Joey.
Yeah.
How do you take your tea?" And I thought, you know what? I love Brooklyn. I love this guy so much.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just picturing him going in there and getting his chamomile.
How often do you get straight up authentic Brooklyn people giving you authentic Brooklyn moments?
Yeah.
That could not have been more New York without someone slamming the hood of a car going, I'm walking here.
Exactly.
Okay, so the Morbid Museum.
Yeah.
Wait, real quick, by the way, Norm, we're Facebook Live in this right now.
Oh, great. Hello,
Norm,
Facebook
do you want to pull a chair around so you're more comfortable on that side?
Sorry, not just...
Are you good?
So you're not like...
I didn't know that this was on live or...
Yeah.
Or,
this is the first time we've done this.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
So, like, now we can't edit it out when you say the N-word.
Uh-oh. Well, which N-word?
Newton.
Oh. Yeah, we...
But no fig attack.
You guys want some fig N-words?
There you go.
Norman, do we have any comments on there yet?
Some coming in.
Okay.
What?
All right, cool.
Hey, we got
all right,
Detroit
what's up,
people.
Detroit?
What's up, Detroit?
Yeah.
Once we get into the Universal stuff, then we'll throw some questions that way.
Great.
Norman, and if you get tired at one point and want to figure out a way to post that up, because I feel like we're going to do that for another 10 minutes. Oh, what is this?
I got the
selfie
stick.
Oh, the selfie stick.
I got that.
So, ah.
Could we even like on the end of the table, Norm, if there's a way to like... There might be some books down there.
We'll figure it
DVDs
out.
DVDs if you want to. Yeah.
Where's an Asian when you need one? damn it. That's on the Facebook Live.
I like that you're trying to figure out how to use a selfie stick.
Norm, how about this?
To prop up a camera.
Yeah.
Hand that to him.
And not using the actual function of the selfie stick where you can lock the camera in.
And hold it in.
Yeah, I wonder if we can go in the, in the Kleenex box? Sideways? Yeah.
In the Kleenex box sounds like my entire junior high experience. spent alone.
All right,
whatever. Just hold it.
So the Morbid Anatomy Museum.
Yeah, it's just this weird building on a corner, and it's a lot of taxidermy and.
Is that like the Elephant Man or shit?
Yeah,
like that?
You know, like old. It's very steampunk, but like steampunk in a haunted house. Kind of vibe to it, which is the same vibe as the tattoo parlor, Triple Diamond, also in Brooklyn, where I got a tattoo once.
Of what?
I got the logo of Knoxville, Tennessee, the Sun Sphere logo from the 1982 World's Fair. And
because everyone knows that one.
Yeah. Well, it's not for them. It's for me.
Yeah. Brad, would you get tattoos for other people? If that were the case, I would have Lottie Divac on this shoulder and Drazen Petrovic on this one.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Two of Yugoslavia's finest.
Yugoslavia's.
You know what, man? You try saying that when you didn't plan on saying
that. They're the Yugoslavliest.
There you go. God, why didn't they make a sitcom called Yugosloveliest? Would have been the best.
Have you thought about getting more tattoos?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. If you get tattoos, do you guys have tattoos?
I don't have
any. No, and I kind of want one. And every time I bring that up to a buddy or my mom, they're like, no,
Jewish.
Don't do that. Because they know, they're like, you don't want one. And I'm like, but I kind of do.
Yeah.
Like, where would you get it? I go, I don't know. What would you get? Not sure yet. And there you go.
Yeah.
Well, see, I want you to get a tattoo, Adam, because I know it's not if you would get an 80s cartoon character, but which one and how many.
Or might even go even more of an obscure and get, like, the cast of Designing Women on my lower back.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like,
sure, get
the
that
whole
Delta
cast.
Burke tramp stamp.
Yep.
Yeah.
And whoever that black guy was.
Gene Smart, Meshach Taylor.
Yep.
Who else was in there?
A lot of good ones.
Oh, yeah. Geez.
Maybe get
Dixie Carter. Oh, maybe Dixie Carter, Knoxville native.
Nice.
And welcome back to
full
circle.
That's right.
Dude, so you have Pat Summitt, Peyton Manning, and
Dixie Carter.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And David Keith's off in the other back.
So like, when people watch you on Drunk History, you're not faking it.
No.
You really like this stuff.
I do, yeah.
You love these obscure history stories.
Yeah, by the way, you know, I think we'd been working at Universal for a little bit when that happened, right?
Uh-huh.
And when that happened, not only to me is Drunk History one of the greatest shows on television now, but of all time.
Yeah,
And the fact that you were the first for any of it.
Yeah.
On Funny or Die, the first video, the first inception, before it was even the, you know, juggernaut that it is now.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
How did that all happen? Derek Waters, who created the show.
Who was a genius and created a fantastic television show. He came to me. So Derek is friends with Jake Johnson.
Yeah.
And Jake Johnson was drunk one night and telling an
Jake
Otis.
Jake Johnson of
New Girl and
Tons
and
of
Cops and all that. Yeah. Jake was drunk and telling a story about Otis Redding one night. And Derek, it just popped into his head the idea of one of these History Channel style reenactments happening over what Jake was saying.
Yeah.
So he came up with this idea of let's do what the History Channel does, where they where a historian tells a story and reenactors act out whatever the historian says.
Right.
And he called me up and he pitched that idea. He was like, "You love history. Do you want to be the historian for this?" And I said, "Sure." And he said, "Do you want to be really, really drunk when you do it?" And I said, "All right, that sounds hilarious." Yeah. So he came over to my apartment that I had with my girlfriend at the time, and he brought a bottle of Johnny Walker Black.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I proceeded. He had one with me. Well, so Jeremy Connor, great comedy director. Jeremy Connor.
At least he got you the black and not the red.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's going classy.
Yeah, he's going. We're going a step up. Sure. Classy. Sure. It's not blue or green but you know,
it's enough to tell a story.
Exactly.
Let you know he cares.
Yeah. And he came over, and Jeremy Connor came over and shot it, and Derek asked me questions. And the reason that first one was about Alexander Hamilton was because that was the particular episode of American Experience that had been on PBS that week. So that was so that you, was why
so,
I did that one.
So do you just tell the same story that they did, but then drunk?
Well, I watched the document. My thing with that show was – I wanted to find a story that hooked me. And so I was watching a lot of history stories that week. I wanted to find some sort of human story because for me, it was the funny isn't in the way that I would tell the story. I wanted to earnestly tell a story that moved me, knowing that the simple but impossible task of telling it while completely hammered is where anything funny was going
to
come out
of. That is a brilliant approach because the more connected you are to something.
Yeah.
And now you're trying to battle through the filter of inebriation and still stay passionate and really earnest about it is just going to get sloppy, but sloppy sensitive.
Yeah. And that's how I've always approached that show. I've never tried to be funny in telling the story.
No, and that's one of the things I love about the show is to make it funny, you have to try to not be funny.
Yeah.
Like you have to try to be serious and then that's what makes it hilarious.
Well, you just have to have a hook and something important about that story that you need to get across.
Right.
So you guys do that first, and they have a medic on hand for the show, right?
They do. This wonderful nurse named – I mean, the ones that we did on the internet were – that was
nope.
No, that was Jeremy Lance. With a camera.
So when you guys,
actually, that night I got so drunk that I threw up on the couch – and in the middle of the bed. So, and Derek was just like, "Peace out." And he just left because he knew my girlfriend was there. And he's like, "She'll take care of him."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he called me the next day. But
so then when they cut that together, and after you do that, you're just like, okay, cool. Like this is, I'm in the age of a lot of sketches and videos. Uh-huh. That was another just fun thing that I said yes to that was fun.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And then they put it up on Funny or Die, which was, I think I'm going to say like 3 or 4 years in, right, to being...
Actually, the way that Derek did it I thought was really smart. He didn't put it online at first. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to put it online at all. He just wanted to, like the original South Park where there was those VHS tapes that got passed around, he put it on DVDs and he gave it to people. Hey, here's a DVD that I made. And so it sort of had like a little bit of underground buzz to it.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Then he put it on YouTube during the holidays, which I thought was really smart because everybody that lives in Los Angeles that he knew scattered around the country. So it appeared in multiple cities at the same time. And it sort of, he knew it was good and it sort of grew from that. And then he later on put it on Funny or Die.
Yeah.
But it started on YouTube.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
And then do you just see it go through the roof, and then like how fast does
messages from people you haven't even talked to?
It was weird. It was one of those weird things that once it took off, like I was in a bar in South Carolina, some guy recognized me from it. Was like, "Hey, if you tell me a story, I'll buy you a beer." And I was like, "All right, sounds great." So this guy bought me a beer, and then like. His girlfriend came up and she's like, "I'll get you a shot. Tell me another story." So I've got like 30-second stories of little history nuggets that I've tried to compile. But it's not, I mean, this show is not my show. I want to point out to your audience. This is Derek Waters' baby.
Right.
I happened to be the first one to do it. It was his idea.
Yeah.
But I've done episodes every season and I'm very blessed to have gotten to
do it. You're back on the show constantly. Hell, you played John F. Kennedy in one of them.
I did play John F. Kennedy. He was like, "You want to come and do a cameo spot in one where you're not drunk?" I was like, "Yeah, sure."
That to me is the some of the sheer brilliance of the show. Like, mm-hmm. those lip syncing, I mean, like, I just saw one with Viola Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she, I mean, sometimes people are really spitting out a lot of words mm-hmm. fast, and the little moments in, like, delivery or the pauses or mm-hmm. the burp or everything, like, she didn't skip a beat to where, I mean, 99% of everybody is hitting every lip sync moment.
Yeah.
But, like, some of them are like, oh, no, I think she just said that. She's not, like, lip sync, you know, because right. it's so spot on.
And they pump the sound through big loudspeakers
okay.
on the day in the studio or location or wherever.
How much do they even rehearse for that? They probably get the track and they get to...
It's a couple weeks in yeah. advance. Like, we get the stories 6 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
We get to pick. Derek will give me five or six stories and tell me to pick one. And he's never been wrong about which one I'm going to pick. Like, he gives me a list. Yeah, he gives me a list, and I tell him which one I want to do. And he's like, yep, I even wrote down that that's the one you were going to pick.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Have you ever been that drunk before? You and I have had our boozy nights.
Yeah. But and never, like, but you hold full yeah. bottle. Because this is like a full bottle of Bullet.
Did usually. You have any yeah. sort of trepidations about putting online being that fucked up?
No, I knew that I knew that Derek would take yeah. care of me
yeah.
and it would be a fun night.
Yeah.
He never, that's he's the drunk whisperer. He
yeah.
it's amazing what that guy can do. He takes good care of his people. I'll say that.
Because there are shows, you know, you see a lot of people, comedians, like, posting things of, like, mm-hmm. drunk this or drunk that for, like, a show where they get fucked up and do something, and you're like, oh, man, like, whatever is being partnered with the drinking isn't as strong to support. That right. just looks like you're just getting fucked up
well,
for,
I mean,
for the sake of it.
It yeah. just works on so many levels because, when, like, history for some people is so boring, but
right.
you have someone... shit face telling it to you.
And also, the stories are compelling.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, when you find out these amazing stories that don't get told, like, history class will tell you, they'll tell you about the Battle of Hastings and how that mm-hmm. was where yeah. the power shifted. No, that's
the guy
that's
who invented Coca-Cola.
Stuff.
Like, that one was yeah. incredible.
Stuff like that. The fact that James Buchanan was our first gay president, and the fact that Edith Wilson was president for a year and a half after Woodrow Wilson had a stroke, and nobody knew it because
yeah.
she was a good president.
Right.
Like,
how about the fact that Martin Luther King was the one who came up with ba-da-ba-ba-bop, I'm loving
it. Exactly.
So there's yeah. a lot of stuff that just slips through.
That people don't know about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, there's also... For me, I know very little about history, uh-huh. and if you were, I know you know so much, if you were to tell me shit like that, I would believe every word of it. You should actually have some yeah. show where you bring people on that don't know, and like
Five Truths and a Lie.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's like, all right, we're going to do three drunk histories, two of them will yeah. be true, one will not. When it's like, so, this episode of Drunk History, we're going to talk about when Hitler invented Twister.
Yeah. <It's> like,
no. Your right hand head.
he just keeps screaming out.
He called it
right
Hister.
Hand. Yeah. Right hand.
Right hand up.
Right hand up.
Now, do you call it Hister or Twitler?
Yeah.
Mark, were you Lemmings was before Universal? Yeah.
Yeah. Lemmings was. I was at Universal for a long time.
Okay. That's where we met, but I think I might have met yeah. you when you were in Lemmings,
because right.
the Workaholics guys were in there with you.
Yes, yeah. exactly.
For people don't know, we're talking about National Lampoon Lemmings,
mm-hmm.
and if you're not familiar with them, you're familiar with the people that came through there.
Right.
You got your Belushis, your Chevy Chase, your Christopher Guests.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Murray.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a great thing that yeah. National Lampoon did when they were doing the National Lampoon Radio Hour back in the 70s, and
right.
then they brought in a cast, they created a cast. They got Jay Leggett, God rest his soul,
yeah.
Great mentor and comedy guy, brought him in to create this new cast and this new show, and it was... it was one of your old castmates, Jillian Bell.
Yeah.
And the three Workaholics guys, mm-hmm. four Workaholics guys.
Yep.
That was, and then myself, Sitara Falcon. Yeah, it was just a great, great group of people.
And I,
there were more than that, and I'm sorry to the rest.
Google them.
Yeah.
And so they put you guys together to basically revitalize that.
Right,
classic.
To create a new sketch show, because at this time National Lampoon was trying to rebuild its brand after years of just tacking their name onto college movies.
Right, yeah. And that experience was...
the best.
Yeah.
So fun. Except that we started touring. We started a tour. We did two cities. We got Chicago, and then we got to D.C., Baltimore. And then we were sent home because the CEO went to prison.
And they're like, oh, we're sending the CEO. The CEO's been arrested. He's going to prison. Your tour is over.
I mean,
and we all went home.
That sounds like a great episode of Drunk History in the future.
Yeah, right?
Fuck, that's such a bummer.
Yeah, it was a total bummer because it was a really fun.
I know Adam and those guys were like, fuck, here we go. Like, game changer. Like, yeah. This is, we're going to be the next.
And the thing about those guys, everybody knew, like, everybody in the cast. We all knew that they were, we're like, oh, they're going to, these guys are going to blow up. These guys, yeah. Because they were already mail order comedy.
Yep.
And they had a bunch of sketches that basically we were all put together to become this sketch group, but they were working with some of their best sketches that they'd already done before. Yeah. Gotcha. And we folded those into the show. And we actually closed with their Wizards Rap, which is,
it's insane.
It's gold.
Just and, Google that, yeah.
Yeah. And all of these guys, like, Watching those guys work, I was like, man, I just want to be in the audience for this show. I'm so glad I get to tour with these guys because they're really, really talented dudes.
So it's no surprise to you to see them in the show, yeah.
When Workaholics first came on television, I was like, oh, yeah, of course. I cannot wait to watch this because these guys are lunatics. Oh.
And then, like, did they try to get it back going after that tour was canceled, or was that pretty much the end of it?
After that, Lemmings came into a different iteration and went over to a company called Mania TV that was internet television. Mm-hmm. So it was before Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime, and before people started watching it actually on televisions.
Yeah, right.
But post the beginning of YouTube where people were watching short clips. So
gotcha.
Imagine, and it was great fun. It was a blast. We would come in on Monday with new sketches, and then on Friday the sets would be built, and we'd be shooting these. And it was so much fun. We had this giant sound stage. It was a different cast. The Workaholics guys, they had all left. Mail Order Comedy had left to do some other stuff. There was some new people brought in, and at that point in time, it was, you know what people don't want to watch is an hour-long YouTube video.
Yeah.
Like, because there was nobody had been doing that.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
Nobody had been sitting and watching things an hour on a tiny window.
Right, they were definitely ahead of their time.
It was both ahead of its time in the length and behind its time in the format of being on a small screen.
But
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and just the fact that you're kind of in that fraternity of the Lemmings is pretty damn sweet.
That was really
and
nice. Yeah.
You're also in the fraternity of people who have voiced Batman.
That is true.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey. That's unbelievable. I mean, we were talking about your voice earlier. That when I looked up that fact about you, because I mean,
I know it feels. I feel like I'm getting interrogated by the police right now.
Yeah. Yeah. We know things about you.
Oh God.
Are you Batman?
No.
But is it hard not to do the Kevin Conroy voice or your version of that? Which, for those who don't know, that's the voice from the new video games and then Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
Kevin Conroy is...
He's Batman.
He's Batman.
Somebody pointed out, and I thought this was brilliant, that Kevin Conroy was the first one that did Batman who realized that Bruce Wayne does not put on a voice to become Batman. Batman puts on a voice to become Bruce Wayne. Batman is who he really is. Batman puts on a Bruce Wayne costume.
Oh.
Which I thought was a kind of a really cool way of thinking about Kevin Conroy's performance, right?
Yeah.
No, it was just,
it's like Angela Lansbury puts on, like, Teapot in Beauty and the Beast.
Mrs. Potts is who she really is.
Mrs. Potts is who she is. She puts on Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That makes complete sense to me.
Lansbury is Batman.
How do you create the Batman voice? You just...
It totally was, and I didn't put much thought into it at all. I do 1,000 voiceover auditions all the time.
Yeah, sure.
And I was very excited to get one that was Batman, and so on the recording, I just dropped my voice down low and talked as intensely as possible, because I know it was more of a mood piece. You know, it's like Batman it's a very moody comic. And so I was like, I did it quick. I actually did it. I was at a friend's house helping him with a movie that he was working on. And I was like, I got to send off this audition real quick. I'm just going to do a Batman voice that sounds like this. And
just no real emotion.
And it worked. And the director They called me and told me I was cast, and the director called me, and I was mind blown. I was like, I just have to do exactly what I did before.
Yeah. Could you remember what you did before?
Yeah. I did get to say one of the coolest lines ever, because it was like Justice, Super Friends is like Justice League. They all come together.
And then, what was the...
It was Super Friends.
Find it?
Yeah. DC Super Friends, mm-hmm. which can be found on DCKids.com.
Okay.
15 episodes we released on there. And, I got to say the line when Superman shows up to help save the day in Gotham City. I got to say to him, "You're a long way from Metropolis, Superman. If Gotham City's in trouble, it's mine to deal with." And I thought, oh my God, that is the coolest thing that, like, a nerdy kid who loved
fuck
all this stuff to say, right?
How tempted were you when you went out to bars and girls would be like, "What's your name?" For you to go, "I'm Batman."
I'm Batman.
I would never stop doing that. Right?
I'm Batman. I do, like, I called my nephew and left him. Oh, and, yeah, dude. You know, you do all that.
Made
it was a lot of fun. Oh, yeah. It was.
Prior to that, was there a voice once you started getting into the voice acting game of, like, I want to be the voice of Radio Shack, or I want to be the next SpongeBob, or was like Batman.
Batman was up there. Yeah. Like when you see Batman come across, like every once in a while, a voiceover audition would come through and it would say the name of the role, and you're like, oh man, I really want that.
Dude, when I auditioned for Launchpad McQuack for DuckTales, I was like,
I auditioned for Launchpad too.
Of course you did.
Yeah. Did you?
You know who got it?
Who got it?
Beck Bennett.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Of course. He's great. And then you hear that and you go, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's some that just become a bigger deal, and you're like, I'm trying not to, like, put this, like... Yeah.
Well, you had to have that with yours. We talked about this on the phone the other day.
Yeah.
Slimer, dude. Come on. I mean, that's an iconic character.
Yeah.
It's fun. We're the dumbass dorks who've been entrusted with canon. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah. Did anybody try to, any of your, like, other comic buddies try to be like, you should do a Batman, like, give you some, like... pointers to try, or you're like,
oh, no. Like, how
even like
Batman
a nephew
better?
Or somebody, or somebody that was just, yeah.
Well, I think that, like, everybody was just sort of like in awe by it, as I was too. They're like, wait, what? You got what job?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, I'm Batman.
Yeah, I'm Batman.
Do you have any Adam Ray stories that I haven't heard based on
your
time
Universal?
Universal, yeah.
Okay, so I started working there in 2003, but I was a tour guide.
Mm-hmm.
Were you there at that point?
I came in, I came in, I came in 06.
Okay. And that, I think, is when I transitioned to Wolverine. And then
that's
from
right.
there.
You were Wolverine, I remember.
I think
that.
I was Wolverine while you were in the window, I think. And then Disney bought Marvel and the characters were gone. And then I went to the New York Street Beat Cop.
Yeah.
And some of my most favorite days of all time at that park were when Mark Agliardi and Lauren Pritchard or Abel Ayres, whoever, other great improvisers, they put two people up in the window of New York Street, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
It was New York Street in the middle of the park where there was a taxi cab.
Sure.
You guys up in a window.
Pizza place,
a pizza place, an Italian restaurant. And that was supposed to give the vibe of, like, we're in 1940s New York. You see the beat
cop. They're playing Sinatra music.
Sinatra music. That's supposed to be 1940s New York, which is why when you, like I did, take a squirt gun out and shoot old Asian man in the back, and then your boss goes, what are you shooting a squirt gun in 1940s New York for? I go, Jenna, with all due respect, a trolley just drove by with SpongeBob, Curious George, and Fievel singing ooh ee ooh ah ah ching chang walla walla bing bang. No, I'm not a history buff, but I'm pretty sure that song was being played in the 1940s. And I would come out and I'd walk back and forth, and you guys had mics on, and you would scream to the, or, you know, talk to passerbyers, and say,
and what part were you, Mark?
I was Stanley. I was up in a window for like 9 years. I would just sit and yell at people all day as they would walk by.
How do you take your tea?
How do you take your tea?
That job was the most fun, yeah?
It was the most, it's hands down the most fun job I've ever had in my life.
I can attest to the cop thing, but I always wanted to be in the window because you have somebody to bounce off of.
Exactly. Well, we bounced off of you.
Yeah.
The beauty was that Adam Wood, he knew that we were on mics and he wasn't.
Yeah.
So he would say filthy things up to us.
Tell people.
Oh,
you remember any of them?
I don't. I blocked them all out. I don't remember.
I know at some point I would walk by. I remember doing, like, I had a big Orville Redenbacher mustache.
Oh yeah.
I'd walk by and back. I'd be like, hey, what's going on? You guys doing good up there? Yeah. What's the latest? How the Yankees gonna be? We'd have a little banter. I bet you.
Yeah.
So and I always had this one running bit where I would say, like, I just got back from the doctor, right?
Oh,
and found out.
Like, just get back. And by the way, there's kids and tourists walking by. And I'm basically just trying to make them laugh because I know they can't engage in whatever conversation.
And whatever he says, we cannot do anything
about.
So I
go, just got back from the doctor. And like every time Margaret just starts laughing a little bit because he knew he's like, he's going to say some crazy shit.
Something that, filthy is going to come out of
his mouth. And you can't say, hey, don't do that or whatever. Yeah. So I go, because, you know, it's the show is on. So I go, hey, just got back from the doctor. Looks like I got a herpes and AIDS. Yeah. They told me I got the HAIDS. And people are just walking by, and you see people slowly turn. Yeah. And, like, and then you would laugh, and they'd be like, well, you got to get that thing.
Yeah, you got to get that. You got to go see a physician about that. Look, I not for nothing. You probably shouldn't be shaking hands with all these people out here.
I just got back from the doctor. Yeah. I saw the physician.
Oh, you saw? Well,
what's your advice to take care of my HAIDS?
All right, look, you know what? Take this tongue depressor. Go to the other end. See what you get out of there.
You guys would get to like improvise musicals and like.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
we did a whole day once. Not a whole day. We did a whole show, a whole set once, where we decided we wanted people to think we were audio animatronics up in the window. So we just turned on. It was during Christmas time. We turned on Christmas songs and we just pretended to be animatronic characters in the window singing these Christmas songs. And when people would stop and look at us funny, we would just either throw shade at them or like startle them in some way.
Yeah,
it's one of, you know, it's the whole theme park classics.
Well, I mean, the thing is we've all worked at theme parks. I worked at Disneyland.
What'd you do at Disneyland?
I was a character host. I was bodyguard for the characters.
Sure, I worked at Disneyland too.
Oh, what'd you do there?
I was at the same time I was at Universal. I was working at Universal 4 days a week.
Traitor.
I know, and I was at Disneyland 2 days a week.
Doing what at Disney?
I was in the Aladdin musical.
You two-timer.
Oh, I played the genie in the Aladdin musical.
Oh, man. Dream role.
It was a great role. So fun.
Did you sing all the original songs?
Well, I sang Friend Like Me.
Yeah,
there you go. And then I sang the Prince Ali.
Yes.
Because that was... and then I would...
Kids love it?
Kids loved it.
That show was a hit there.
Yeah, and we would get to write our own jokes, which was great. We would write jokes for the show, try to keep up with what's going on in the world.
Sure. Like what? Like how would you stay topical as a genie?
Like
so when 9/11 happened, how would you reference that?
Yeah.
Jesus. Probably not.
Okay. I mean, you said topical.
There were a lot of guys that would do like Kardashian stuff. People just laugh if you mentioned, you like say Justin Bieber's name, people start laughing. I'll tell you the jokes.
Because
I would get in trouble.
Because it's like Jafar said something about Taylor Swift.
Exactly.
Everyone's going to crack up.
Right. Yeah. But the only one who was allowed to do it was the genie. Because in the movie, Robin Williams was the only one who was keeping things topical.
Like he did Jack Nicholson references, for God's sake. Yeah.
So this was around Obama's election. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where everybody, all the other characters leave the stage and the genie is upset by that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is when I got in trouble for all the people. I was like, hey, where you guys going? Come on. It's because I'm blue, isn't it? Y'all don't like blue people. You know, one day we're going to have a blue president and everything's going to change. And that one got me in trouble. She came backstage after the show and just went, no, and then shut the dressing room.
Aww.
I didn't think I thought it was pretty tame.
I think that's good.
Those shows also, it's so predominantly viewed by kids. Like the adults, they're too, like, you got to like.
You got to throw something in there.
Yeah.
Something
there for that.
Was there ever a Universal anytime you felt like you were getting, pushing the envelope or no?
We would push the envelope a little. There was, I remember
the HAIDS discussion made.
The HAIDS. Well, you weren't on a mic. Were you there with the ship, the cardboard ship?
No.
I don't know who this was I was playing this game with, but they used to have like these little pirate paper boats that they would fill with like chicken strips and fries for kids.
Yeah.
It was this little pirate ship. And somebody had left one sitting on the bench across from our window, and a woman came by and picked it up and walked away with it. And we must have done 7 minutes on, hey, look at that. That lady just took a ship in the middle of New York Street. She just came right over here, took a ship, and left.
I mean, that's a gold mine.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And when you're on a microphone in a theme park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe it. I never seen nobody take a ship right here, right in front of our window.
The balls on that lady. Just to take a ship.
This is why you weren't in the window. The balls on the fucking stones on that broad.
Dude, I know I definitely slipped out some F-bombs.
I didn't even know women could take a ship.
Yeah.
Never seen him do it before.
Yeah, I thought it was a faux pas. Did you love working at Universal?
Oh, yeah.
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 I tell people all the time, as much as I joke about it, and I'm sure, Brad, you have similar, right? Like, a soft spot in your heart for that. You're at a place where
Ham House is heaven, man.
Yeah. I mean, there was a game, like, whenever I would host for Mickey, my favorite thing to do would be I would tell the person in the Mickey outfit, hey, stay absolutely still. We're going to do statue. The game was called Statue.
Yeah.
So everyone would walk into Mickey's house where there's all these rooms where you go to meet Mickey in, and Mickey would just be standing absolutely still, and then I would announce. I'd be like, Mickey, man, he forgot it was the big football game today with him and Goofy, and they're out playing, so he's not here. But we have this statue that you could take pictures of.
Perfect.
So you take pictures with the statue, and then like you would see the look on the faces of these kids. They would just go, "What? It's just a statue."
Oh.
Then I go, you know what? You know this is Disneyland. We gotta. You guys came here to have a good time. We're going to have a good time. Okay, so there's always magic at Disneyland. So on three, let's say Disney magic and see if anything's going to happen.
You were good.
One, two, three. Everyone screams out, Disney magic. And then Mickey just does a little jump and comes alive. And the kids would just go nuts.
Oh, that's good.
Dude, the power that you had.
Wielding that magic
Disney
wand.
Disney magic?
Yeah, they would just go nuts. Mm-hmm. And then like you'd see like the dads like looking at me like,
That's pretty good.
I see what you did there. I see what you were doing. Now, does it apply to like other situations? Like if you have whiskey dick and you're trying to like, can you say Disney magic?
Disney magic.
And
get,
yeah. Have it turn
and
from.
Tinkerbell comes over, puts some pixie dust on it, and suddenly it raises
fly,
up.
I can fly.
Well,
think
you know
of
what?
A wonderful thought. This going inside you. What? Well, I will get back to you on that, Adam. I'm going to drink some Bullet tonight, and I'll see if that's true.
There you go.
The theme park world I always try to explain to people is like you have – like you don't know the true – like everyone sees just one side of it, but like the behind the scenes of it, like – I mean, dude, the stories I would hear are like seeing people get in fights – like the guy dressed as Shrek and the guy dressed as Spider-Man getting into like a verbal confrontation behind the set. Like I'd be watching that being like looking around like hoping someone else could see to be like, does anyone see how like this is where no
I
one
am
gets-
not high enough to watch this happen right now.
Every day I felt like I was on an ecstasy trip. was there ever something at work at Universal where you were like, oh, like this is my life? Where you just kind of have a step back moment and you're like, whether it's like maybe you see a celebrity there because celebrities are always – I saw John Stamos dressed as the cop. And I always tell a story where I would like blow my whistle to old ladies who were walking slow and be like, you know, tweet, like, you know, slow down, man, you're going too fast. It's not a race, you know. And they go, I was already going slow. That's why that's funny.
Yeah.
And I did that to Stamos once. And I go, hey, perfect hair. Slow it down. You're going a little bit too fast. All right, you're going to knock somebody over. And he looks at me and just acknowledges like actor trying to have a bit with me. And he goes, nice. And just, dude, just fucking niced me with the Stamos look. And I was like, oh, burn. Like, oh, man, I'm struggling here. Like,
there was a character we would play in the window that was a woman. And I would wear a big bouffant wig and do my face all up and earrings and
and you would just flirt with the boys as they would walk by. Oh, look at you in your little white shirt with your red hat. You look like the whipped cream and a cherry on top of a sundae.
Like, we would do shit like that. And I would come off stage and I would take my wig off and I'd be standing there in a wife beater and earrings and lipstick, and I would look in the mirror and I'd go, I went to theater school. I studied Brecht and August Wilson and Shakespeare.
Yeah.
You have those. But moments. You know what it is? Yeah. It is it's vaudeville. That's what theme parks are. Yeah. I feel like it's the closest thing that exists now to vaudeville.
Old school.
You go, you punch your time card. You make some people laugh. You tell some jokes. You sing a few songs. Mm-hmm. You punch your time card. You go watch a ball game. Like it is as blue collar as show business gets.
You're a part of these people's like vacation. Like for some dude, I mean, I know I can attest to going on a family vacation where like, you know, you can tell they're like, oh, this is like a save the marriage trip, and like we're you know, and we're and it didn't work.
That went so fast.
Deal breaker. But so spoiler alert. And so then so I can tell sometimes when I'm like, oh, like this little moment I have with this family could be like a game changer on the day and maybe the weekend and maybe the marriage, whatever. And so you definitely, you know, it's exciting to be a part of that. And then on the flip side, sometimes, like, I would have people recognize me as Wolverine at, like, a comedy club that night.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, no, be quiet. They're like, you took a picture with our family. Like, you're that guy. What are you doing? I'm about to do an open mic. Oh, cool. All right. And then you do the Wolverine. Yeah. Oh. I thought you were.
So you're not just Wolverine?
Yeah. So you're not the actual Wolverine?
So that's not your life?
Yeah.
Wait, so you're telling me Wolverine's also a stand-up comedian? I never read that comic.
You weren't that funny at the park.
Yeah. When was
that? Snicked.
Such a good reference.
So you're. We got to wrap this up.
All right. Yeah.
But this is the best. And you got to come
so
back.
Fun.
But you're a full time New Yorker now.
I'm a full time New Yorker now. I'm a most time New Yorker.
Okay.
My girlfriend lives in Los Angeles, so I come back and forth with frequency. And it's dirt cheap to fly. It's cheaper to fly from New York to L.A. than it is to fly from New York to anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
It's like a shuttle.
Yeah. It's pretty much as a guy that just. Got back from Tampa, and then I go to Virginia Beach next week. I'm like, wait, why does that cost that much? But then here in New York, it's like $200. Like, it's nuts.
So I highly recommend if you live in New York or L.A., just start living in both places. Have a significant other in the other one.
What do you love about New York versus L.A.? Because you spent a lot of time here.
I did.
And now you're there.
Uh-huh.
And what is like, I mean.
I love not having to drive.
Yeah.
That's a huge one for me.
That's solid.
I love that I can walk out my front door, and on my block, I've got a record shop, a comic book store, a Thai restaurant, two bars, and a bodega.
That's anything and everything you need.
Yeah,
that's a day right there.
Yeah, that's a whole day without leaving the block.
Yeah.
And there's something about the energy of New York City. It is every street is a vein with blood pumping through it. Every avenue is a freeway that you walk out your front door and it's like a freeway on ramp. You walk out your front door and you merge and you just go.
And you love that energy.
I love that energy.
Some people don't.
Yeah.
But
for me, that is crack.
If you get off on that, then that is like, I mean, shit.
Yeah.
There's a, stepping out on something that's just going immediately, you kind of have no, especially for our business, you kind of need that.
Just got to go.
Yeah.
And that's got to be crazy because you came from Knoxville where it is the exact opposite.
It is slow.
Yeah. There is definitely something called a southern pace.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You don't move too fast in the South. No. You can go to Cracker Barrel, which is one of my favorite restaurants. and
really?
you can spend a good 3 hours on one meal at Cracker Barrel.
Well,
in New York, you're never in a restaurant for longer than 45 minutes.
No.
Right.
It's all right, great. We're done.
Yeah.
On to the next thing.
Yeah. Well, because at the Cracker Barrel, you go, you have the meal, you hit the general store. That's also in the Cracker Barrel.
Maybe, you play the giant checkers.
You have to play the giant checkers.
Sure.
Maybe get that game where you jump the pins over the pins in the triangle to try to lead the last pin. Then you're like, oh, wait, we could I've been here now for an hour and a half. Now I'm starting to get hungry again. You want to get dessert? You want to get a snack?
Exactly.
You want to get something? And now all of a sudden you're in a fucking trap, man.
Yeah.
You're in that fucking Cracker Barrel trap.
Oh, God, you're in the crack hole. You're in the cracker hole.
I went to do a Cracker Barrel, I think it was in Utah, and the boss came out and scolded our waitress who was being like very like – I wouldn't say flirty, but just very pleasant, having some good banter with myself and the other comedians.
Uh-huh.
And he comes out and he goes, Kristen, what are you doing? And she goes, just talking to the customers, being all sweet, and they're fine. They're comedians. He goes, oh, cool. I've got a joke for you. What do you call the waitress who wasn't working? And we all pause.
Geez.
And we all pause, and I swear to God, he goes, bullshit. And we go, and my buddy, Jeff Dye, who was just on the podcast, turns to the guy and goes, hey, man, why are you such an asshole? And we all just go, yeah, like, she's been great. And he was like, and then it kind of threw him off guard, and he was like, I mean, he goes, and then he kind of stumbled and goes, I'm just kidding, we have fun here. And we were like, no, man, that was a real, I mean, kudos to the delivery and the punchline, did not see it coming.
Yeah, right.
But for a Cracker Barrel manager, you know, I don't know what the comedy usually is like, but that was, you know,
that's
funny
pretty good.
If we step aside from it. But also, she was so sweet, and she then just kind of sauntered back and was like, okay, I'll go get your biscuits, you know. and the guy was
so
like,
sad.
And he was like, sorry about that, guys. And we were like, no, man.
No, you sure.
Yeah. Fuck off.
Yeah. You're a dick. You're that Cracker Barrel manager?
In Utah.
From Utah?
Oh.
You know who you are.
Yeah, if you're listening to this right now,
you know what?
Bullshit.
It is kind of, I mean, it's like a great dad joke. You know, like, what do you call somebody who didn't take the trash out on time? You know.
Yeah, Adam is what I call him.
You.
Yeah, you. That's you. What we call him.
So, yeah, you get it? Do it.
You get it?
Yeah. I hope I'm a dad with shitty jokes.
Oh, that's how dad jokes end.
Yeah.
Get it?
Get it. Yeah.
You get that one?
All of them. Because you never do get it.
No.
So yeah. Well, Brad and I are going to be in New York soon, and we'll do this again from your place in Brooklyn.
Absolutely.
Maybe post a night of drinking.
Oh, yeah. Or during a night of drinking.
Oh. Even better.
There's one of those bars. There's never anyone in there.
Really?
Yeah, it's like an old man bar. There's a really cool bar next door, and then there's this old man bar. We'll just go to the old man bar because it is awesome in there.
Because they just have the one old man that's just there all day.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
He's keeping the place open.
That's why they call it the old man bar.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, let's give a proper – let's sign off to Facebook Live, first of all.
Bye, Facebook Live.
Mark, tell people – well, we'll plug everything in the intro of the podcast, but just –
Okay, yeah, listen to We Got This on Maximum Fun Network. We're on Twitter at We Got This Tweets, and I personally am on Twitter at Mark Gags.
And I highly advise listen to the best original Ghostbusters character debate.
Yes.
From the We Got This podcast.
Thank you.
Now, if you had to do the best original, best modern Ghostbusters character, obviously you go with...
Slimer.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the band leader.
Yeah. Well, no, no, no. I just like his voice.
I like to look at him.
You know what's so funny? It's like some people were like, so you did Slimer, and they're like, but he didn't say anything. I was like, yeah, I just did the noises and the whatever.
Yeah.
And then this one guy who was hit me up on Facebook, he's like, so you just like said, I was like, yeah, if like, they got a real guy doing the voice, they would probably get Morgan Freeman to be like, hello, I'm Slimer. Boo. You know, or whatever. Like,
you have been slimed.
I'm so sorry. I wish I could tell you it wasn't sticky. But it is. Real quick, you do a Colin Farrell impression?
Aye, that I do. I was accused once of talking with my eyebrows. And somebody said, you know who else does that? I said, Colin. He said, Colin Farrell does. So I started working on it, and I realized that's a bit true.
Colin Farrell is Slimer.
Yeah.
I just do the noises. I'm Morgan Freeman.
Good night, everybody.
So, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe and tell your family and everyone you know.
But what should I tell them? Well, you can just tell them that
Brad Williams and Adam Ray can help you get through the fucking day. Just follow us on Twitter at Funny Brad, and I'm at Adam Ray Comedy.
This has been the About Last Night podcast. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's me, Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamy Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.